It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with Mark Holland, hanging along with Daniel Pryor today. And today a subject that is very important and for all people who are married, and that's communication in marriage and otherwise, and what about poor communication in marriage and how that affects us. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark.
It's your show.
It's good to be here. I'm glad to be on my show and welcome to the listeners too. So I have, we're going to talk about communication. Just as you were saying that, a tune came to mind, communication breakdown, but I'm not, right. I won't sing it or, okay. or the other thing was the, you know, what we have here is a breakdown of communication.
Right. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Failure to communicate. What was that? Cool Hand Luke or whatever.
So talking about communication, because we can always get better at it. And it is one of the big, you know, it's one of the three big ones, you know, when people come in for counseling. It's, as I've said before, it's, you know, communication is trust, forgiveness, or communication. One of those typically come up. So I've addressed communication in some interesting situations, and I thought I probably want to talk about this again on the radio. You know, we talk about these topics repeatedly, but it's never the same, and so different. We have opportunities to address different aspects of it, but so quite a lot of turmoil in marriage comes down to poor communication. Mm-hmm. That is, where issues come up, disagreements, catastrophes, the unexpected comes in, could be relatives, but the unexpected can come in and then there's tension. And what we need to be able to do is to communicate about that. And of course, there's something that underlies that communication because it's more than just exchange of data. But if we have the ability to communicate, and one of the things I want to talk a little bit about as we go on in the show is how that is something that we need to learn. Mm-hmm. It's not just, you know, we can't just, I could say, take a couple and say, these are the communication tools, which I teach the communication tools, and this is why we want to communicate. And so now you have this information and go home and try it out, and they will come back and have zero success because you have to learn it.
Have practice it,
you
too.
Have to practice it. And so it takes, it's not all, you know, perfect practice makes perfect, as they say. Mm-hmm. So, but where to start with good communication? So let's start there. So good communication begins with commitment and devotion to the other person. Mm. It's about the other person. As we said, there's so much about, I have an article at the ChristianCounselorsForum.com, and I think the name of the article, if I can recall it, is a surprising key to successful marriage. And the surprising key to successful marriage is vulnerability, which is a paradox because we, you know, in our culture, it's all about being self-empowered and, you know, being a whole person, and then I come to marriage as a whole person, and I'm hoping that she's a whole person, and if she's not, that's where the trouble comes in. You know, it's me trying to, you know. So it seems odd in our culture to talk about relationship being about the other person. But good communication begins with commitment and devotion. Commitment and devotion, two very important words. To that other person,
trying to understand that other person, as opposed to trying to get them to understand you.
Yeah,
and it's got to be focused first and foremost. And of course, if both people are doing that, then you're going to get it worked out.
And so, the first problem that people see if we approach it that way, Mark, as you've just said, that, you know, commitment to understanding or trying to understand the other person is, you know, so many times heard a husband or a wife say, I can't understand, or I don't understand, or I know, you know, we're not supposed to, you know, understand, or she doesn't make any sense, or he doesn't make any sense. And underlying that is the belief, an actual belief, an actual reality in the brain and mind, that that person cannot be understood. I cannot come to understand that person. And that's one of the first things that has to be unlearned, and it starts with a commitment of devotion to that other person, because if I'm not committed or devoted to that other person, if there's not genuine care of that other person, then I have a vested interest in continuing to believe that the person can't be understood. Mm-hmm. Or we say men can't understand women, or women, you know, Mars and Venus.
Right. Kind of thing.
One person responded, author responded, I don't know if that was the title of the book, it could have been, men aren't from Mars, women aren't from Venus, we're all from planet Earth.
Okay.
Commitment to change, to commitment to personal change for the other person. That's something that people aren't used
to. Not changing the other person, no, but changing yourself.
For the other person.
For the other person.
Yeah, for the other, not just changing myself.
That's okay.
Because I can change, I can have a commitment to change for me.
Mm-hmm.
But communication begins, at least the kind of communication that we're talking about, that people and married couples are striving for and desiring, begins with commitment to change for that other person, to make changes for that other person. Deference to the other person. The other person comes first. That's the most important thing. It's about that other person. Respect for the other person. So we start other-centered, and that's where communication begins. And once we get that in place, then we're ready to start talking about kind of the mechanics of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, any discussion of sensitive issues mm-hmm. then requires self-analysis. Mm-hmm. And what do you mean by this?
Self-analysis. So basically, the chain of sequence is beliefs lead to emotions, lead to behaviors. Beliefs, emotions, behaviors. Beliefs, emotions, behaviors. Of course, communication is a behavior, but there's a lot of emotion behind the behavior, because behaviors don't happen without emotions. Now, emotion can be very fine. There's probably someone out there saying, you mean when I just lift this coffee cup and take a sip here, that there's an emotion driving that? Well, emotions can be
and
very...
And I just do that?
Very, yeah, that's right. and emotions can be very, very small, but the word emotion means before emotion. So, yes, technically, every behavior requires an emotion. That can be very, very small, but if we took the time, even taking that sip of coffee just now, if we talked about it long enough, I could convince you that there was an actual emotion behind that. Very covered under lots of stuff, but it's there. Mm. It has to be there. Emotion drives the emotion, and beliefs drive the emotions. So when we're self-analyzing, let's start with this. A lot of times we tend to start at the at one end. You can start at either end, but here's what we tend to start at. I'm entering into a conversation with the person, and what I want to start analyzing first is the tone of my voice, things like that. These kind of refer back to the communication tools, which are timing, words, tone of voice, facial expression, body language. So I'm questioning my behavior. The tone of my voice is part of the behavior. The words I use, I'm kind of questioning the words. Are these the words that I really want to use? Questioning my posture, body posture. Okay, so that's part of the self-analysis. Those point us directly then to emotions. Obviously, if I say, is this the tone of voice that I want to use, or if these are words that I want to use, in my mind, there's a kind of a rock and a hard place, because I have some emotion that wants to be expressed, and I'm stopping the sequence here and saying, hold on. The emotion that I'm trying to express has me using these kinds of words and this tone of voice. Do I need to do that? So it puts the fulcrum back on the emotions. So now I'm analyzing the emotions, and I'm questioning my feelings. And, you know, why is there so much emotion about this issue? Do I have to feel this way, or do I choose to feel this way?
Mm.
Now, of course, if we're saying this communication is about what do you think of that sunset? Now, a lot of this process doesn't go on, but we're talking about the kind of communication that get people into trouble.
Mm.
So the next then would be that, you know, when I'm questioning my emotions, that points me directly back to my beliefs, and I'm questioning then my point of view. So I say, you know, do I have to feel so much emotions? Yes, I do, because...
Is this really a hill to die on?
Yeah, that's right. You know, yeah, it is.
Is this really that important?
Points me back to my belief. You know, now I question my viewpoint, and I question my agenda. So those are the things that enter into self-analysis, and that can be quickly done. It doesn't take, you know, 5 minutes, or, you know, just quickly. You know, and I say it makes us, when we self-analyze, it makes us more intentional about the process. And when we're intentional, we always do a better job than if we're unintentional, if we just are, you know, kind of firing from the hip, so mm-hmm. to speak.
So have some healthy self-analysis mm-hmm. when you're trying to communicate. And you say it doesn't take a long time. to run through that in your mind. Maybe you're maybe you've got an appointment. We're going to get together for coffee. These are some things you can think about before you have that meeting over coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and sometimes even as I'm sitting down and in a conversation, there might be these emotions might kind of ebb and flow, and so the person says something that kind of hurt my feelings or something, and then I can also self-analyze there. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, then obviously we're talking about though poor communication today. So you say here an interesting statement: miscommunication is learned. We learned how to miscommunicate. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's a very interesting thing in all of our mental health. Let's call it mental health issues or our emotional. Behavioral issues is that it has to do with a reality that's created in our brain, that brain-mind connection. And so the brain and the sort of circular. So the mind speaks to the brain speaks to the mind. So just briefly, if I hit my thumb with the hammer, my brain responds before my mind. Just, fraction of a second before my mind, because the pain is a physical pain, and the brain responds immediately to that, neurologically to that, and then the mind jumps in and says, "How bad was it?" Now that's not the brain; that's the mind wanting to create a story about the thumb. And so I look at my thumb and I say, "Well, it's bleeding a little bit, but the fingernail is intact, so I think it's going to be okay." Now my brain is going to respond to my mind now. And it's going to be a bit of adjustment in the not maybe as much adrenaline in this neurological balance, which is what the brain is all about. So the mind has a way of kind of putting the brakes on the brain by bringing the narrative in.
Mm.
Okay, but if I'm walking or if I'm reading a book, this is the best analogy. If I'm reading a book, for example, I'm reading a book and I'm reading a scary part of the book. My brain doesn't respond. My mind responds first because there's nothing physical about that. And then the brain responds to the narrative of the mind. So it's just going the other way. Well, all that to say that between the brain and the mind in all of our life is where the reality of what of our circumstances is created. And so when I communicate repeatedly a certain way, my brain learns to, and it'll say that I learn to communicate in such a way, let's say I avoid resolution because it feels like loss. So I'm talking about how I learn to communicate a certain way. I avoid resolution. So I'm growing up and I've never really experienced or in a situation repeatedly where the communication has brought resolution. And I find in that experience, the reality that's built between my brain and my mind is that I avoid resolution because it feels like loss. Now, the narrative of loss in my mind triggers an uncomfortable neurological balance. And so I want to avoid loss because my brain wants this other neurological balance, which my mind then interprets as, I like that feeling better than the fear feeling. Our brain learns to associate a particular neurological balance with the mental narrative of, say, personal empowerment, which would have to do with avoiding loss. So we retain a sense of value, personal value, control, power. We've talked about those before. When we hold ground by not communicating to resolution, because resolution feels like loss, our mind and our brain are mutually reaffirming of that state.
Mm-hmm.
See, the mental narrative and then the brain state. So it becomes our way of communicating. So it becomes a reality, and there isn't another reality. So an analogy might be, we know that there are three dimensions of time and space, three, four. I get force tossed around there for people who are really into it. But let's just say, for most of us, three dimensions of time and space. That's our reality. Now, we might know somebody who might read a book or hear on the Science Channel or something, how that there are other dimensions of time and space, and I can accept that. Why not? But they don't do me any good. Mm. They're not any good at all in my reality. I can't make any use of them at all. So it's simply not there. We live in the three dimensions of time and space. That's my reality. And so it's very much like when I've learned to communicate in a certain reality, I may hear of other people communicating, and I may even see it, but it's meaningless to me because the reality between my mind and brain is, based on this neurological balance and the narrative of that, is that there's only one reality for me, and there is no resolution in communication.
And that's, so that's the learned miscommunication that is tripping you.
That's the learned miscommunication. And so I continue to miscommunicate because it reaffirms that.
Well, we can learn to communicate to resolution. We're going to talk about that here in just a moment. If you would like to get some help from Daniel for something you're going through in your life, life coaching and counseling for you, a family member, somebody you know who needs some help. Daniel, how do people get in touch with you?
My phone number is 425-778-6169. They can contact me through email. BibleBasedCounselor.com is the website. Also podcasts at that website of our shows, and then articles also at ChristianCounselorsForum.com.
More details as well at KCISRadio.com. We'll be back with more of Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor here in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Where marriage is concerned, an ounce of prevention is worth a lot more than a pound of cure. Too many couples start off with misconceptions and then wait until the damage is done to seek counsel. As a marriage counselor, I help couples understand both the purpose and process of marriage, and I teach essential tools of communion. If you're married or thinking about marriage and want to get started right, contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Mark Holland tagging along as well. We're talking about communication in marriage, how to correct miscommunication, and the provocative idea that miscommunication is learned. We're going to learn how to communicate better to resolution in just a moment. Daniel, though, you wanted to tell us about a story of a couple who, well, tell us a little bit about this couple.
And let me make it general. So I just to say that I see this more often than just once, but the couple of scenarios that I see often are a couple that have are maybe married later in life. And so they have this learned communication style, and then they come together. I've even had couples who have been previously married.
Maybe married for a long time.
Both widower. So let's say we're ruling out what we would assume to be obvious signs of dysfunction. And so there aren't any perfect marriages, but let's say I'm looking at a couple where there are no overt signs of dysfunction, and so they got along somehow in previous marriages, maybe for a long period of time, and I've had people come to me in their 70s and even early 80s for counseling, and a lot of times it has to do with friendships and communications, and so it's coming together later in life, having learned these communication styles, and then dealing with this reality that we just talked about, or this fact that we just talked about, that the reality, their learned reality is that there's really no such thing as resolution. Or if they use the word resolution, they certainly don't mean what we talked about in the beginning of the show about the basis of good communication. Another one might be a couple maybe just married midlife. They've had experience, raised the kids. The kids are out of the house now, and they find that, boy, if we could only communicate, it would add a whole new dimension to our relationship, but we can't communicate, and they've learned that. Their learned reality is that it's not that we necessarily can't, it's that there's no such thing. I use the word resolution.
Well, yeah, what do you mean by this term, communicate to resolution? That is possible. Yeah. That is kind of what we're all after when we talk about good communication.
My wife and I have experienced something that all couples must experience if they learn to communicate, and that is issues have come up that we had to work very hard to get through those issues. And I think any couple that's been married for any period of time would recognize the story of the couple that goes to bed at night with a chip on the shoulder, and they're still talking about it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And a lot of times, what they'll do at that point is just throw in the towel. Okay, that's it. And so they go to sleep. or try to go to sleep, and then the next morning, and eventually a couple days later, it sort of wears off. But they're never quite, they're not close. They don't, I mean, eventually they get back to where they were, but those things add up. Yeah, they add up. And they affirm that belief that resolution just doesn't happen. You know, these books about resolution and people, you know, it just doesn't happen. So the next time such an issue comes up, they're beginning to form a pattern here where they argue about it for a while and then drop it because they've never learned that resolution is there. But sometimes you have to communicate through to resolution and through to the part where there's been the hurt feelings. Now there's the apologies, the forgiveness, and then that's something now that we are learning to continue. It requires oftentimes several time-consuming attempts like this because anything about resolution seems unnatural. You know, when I'm teaching people about this kind of thing, the road feels like unnatural. But of course, the alternative is if I keep doing things that feel natural, I will always arrive at the same non-destination, let's say. I'll always have the same outcome. So to change the outcome, I've got to do things that don't feel natural. And that's where people sometimes get hung up, because if it doesn't feel natural, they say, well, you know, I'm just faking it. I'm just pretending, instead of realizing that it will always feel that way if you're trying to correct a behavior, because you have to do something that's not natural.
Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
I've heard that term.
I went to a chiropractor one time, maybe my first time ever going to a chiropractor and listening to that spiel that they give you about, you know, you're going to have to come back for a few months, you know. So for me, it was just crack it and get out, you know, get back to work. But this was a situation where, you know, I was having a lot of pain and going through it for months. And I thought, okay, you know, I'll do the several month thing. So this guy adjusted my back, and I went home, and I tell you, Mark, when I stood up straight, one of my hands was at my side, and the other one was out about 9 inches, and my clothes were all cockeyed. I got so mad. I called the guy and said, I'm coming right back down there, and you're fixing me. And I went down there, and you know, he said, okay, take a look, and he says, well, he said, Dan, your back is perfectly straight. And it's just that the muscles have grown around this activity for years and years and years, and it's going to take a while for the muscles to grow and readjust. And it did several weeks before it finally started feeling like normal. And that's the thing that people don't expect when they're learning to communicate, is that it's not going to feel natural.
And it doesn't get fixed immediately. It takes some time. It takes some practice.
Another thing is learning that it's about the other person's good, as we talked earlier, and the issues are always secondary. The thing we're arguing about is secondary. First thing is, I'm taking care of that other person, my wife. That's the first thing. The issue is secondary. Because you'll always have issues. And if you don't get to the place where it's about the other person, you'll never solve the issues. We are retraining our brain to associate this process, this new unnatural feeling process, with the pleasurable neurological balance. The mind plays a role in this, as we've talked. The narrative must be about the good of serving and caring of the other person. So the mind has to change its narrative and say, it really is, I want it to be about that other person. It really is about that other person, and communicate that so that the brain begins to associate this new idea of it being about the other person with this better, more comfortable neurological balance. And then pay attention to the tools, which we talk about. Timing. Is this the right time to talk about this? The words I actually use, my tone of voice, my facial expression, my body language. And then remembering, I think, that small victories are huge gains. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times the resolution feels like just a small victory. But small victories are huge gains. And then the other thing is, you only lose when you quit trying. And that's one of the things that fights against this, is people feel the reality is that we're not going to resolve this, but that you will resolve it if you work through to resolution and then just start continuing to do that. You only lose when you quit trying. As long as you're trying and putting that other person first, you're working in the right direction.
Well, I think that's a model for life, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You only lose when you quit trying.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's great tips there. How to better communicate in marriage, always an interesting topic. You've gotten several podcasts and other articles about this subject of communication in marriage.
Yeah, and this will be up at the website at Bible-Based Counselor. I just follow the podcast, and so we'll have these we'll have this show up there, too.
People need some help with their communication in their marriage. How do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
That phone number is 425-778-6169. You can email me through the website at BibleBasedCounselor.com.
You have offices in Bellevue and Edmonds.
Correct.
And so you're open for counseling and also life coaching, too. Mm-hmm. You do a lot of life coaching as well as counseling.
That's right. Yeah.
So, if you're listening today and you need some help to communicate better in marriage, give Daniel a call. Get in touch with Daniel. Again, BibleBasedCounselor.com. More details as well at KCISRadio.com. This has been Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Bellevue and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.